Copper Shores Community Health Foundation wants you to join Megan at the Market. Our very own Megan Jazak, registered dietitian and community health educator, is coming to your farmer's market. Join her at the downtown Houghton Farmer's Market on Tuesday, the Hancock Torrey Farmer's Market on Thursday, and the Main Street Calumet Farmer's Market on Saturday. You can ask her anything about nutrition, healthy eating, recipe ideas, resources, and more. Put her knowledge to the test and let her show you how tasty healthy eating can be. Join Megan at the Market this week in Houghton, Hancock, and Calumet.
Good Sunday morning. Once again, welcome to Copper Country Today. I'm Todd Van Dyke. Thank you for tuning in, whether it be on the air or through our podcast, which has become increasingly popular. We're brought to you by the Copper Shores Community Health Foundation. Learn more about them at coppershores.org. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And frankly, I've been doing interviews on Domestic Violence Awareness Month for a lot longer than I care to think. And the reason that I kind of approach it that way is because it's such a terrible problem, but we don't seem to be making a lot of progress in it, at least as a society. We do make incremental progress.
Right, that's right.
And Mary Nimala from the Barbara Kettle Gunlock Shelter Home joins me. And I guess that's what we have to be satisfied with for now, at least, is that we can make incremental progress on this one victim at a time.
That's about what it is. I mean, every case is, you know, similar yet different. And we do what we can the best to make a safe environment for her and help her in her decision making.
And we talk about her in general on this program, but there are exceptions. There are men who are victims of abuse as well.
That's correct. 95% of the abuse in the United States is against women. And there are males that we provide services for, or for all genders, actually. And, you know, the percentages are small, but nonetheless, it still happens.
Is there abuse in same-sex relationships?
Yes, there is.
Do we see that much?
Yes, we do.
So you have woman-on-woman abuse, man-on-man abuse.
Yes.
Which is more common?
Probably women to women.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's an issue that's probably growing in importance as well, as we see more and more of those same-sex committed couples who then run into problems.
Right, and there's an abuser in one or the other, you know, and so we would help the victim in that situation.
And I stress this because even though we talk about victims in terms of female, if you are a male victim, you should not feel afraid to reach out for help as well.
That's correct.
And while you can't necessarily go to the Barbara Kettle Gunlock Shelter Home or any of the shelter homes for in-house, you don't have the ability to house men, do you?
Well, not in the shelter, but we would provide another safe place for them for sure.
Okay, so there are options in that regard.
Right.
I suppose too that the emotional dynamics are a whole lot different between a female abuse victim and a male abuse victim, because we males, we're supposed to be macho, we're supposed to be manly. We're not supposed to be on the receiving end of this kind of thing.
Well, everyone's feelings are their own, you know, and if someone is being abusive, whether it be physically or emotionally, emotional abuse is we've heard more about that than the physical, even how hard it is to be called dumb and stupid and worthless, and you know, it's not the vulgar names that you think that one might say, but it's just the way somebody makes you feel.
It's that ultra condescending attitude
that basically
makes one partner feel as if they have no value.
Right, it's the power and control that one person has over the other person. It's not as how badly they can be beaten up. It's definitely the power and control and make you feel worthless.
Well, and that's what this is about. A lot of people assume that there's a sexual connotation to this, and sometimes there's a sexual element to it. But the ultimate behind this is the power and control issue.
That's true. I mean, you know, we have learned from our state funders that we now call it IPV, which is intimate partner violence. We still refer to it, of course, as domestic violence as well, because that's what people identify as. But the IPV is intimate partner violence, which means that if two people are committed to one another, it doesn't mean that they have to be in a sexual relationship, but if they're in a committed dating relationship.
Or even living together, necessarily.
Correct, but in a relationship.
Yeah.
You know, then that would be domestic violence or intimate partner violence, if that's the word they hear. Years ago, we would be able to take in, say, a mother who was being abused by their child, adult child, I mean, and that would be domestic violence, and it still is, but it's not IPV.
Okay,
and
so that's kind of out of your...
Well, we would still be able to help them as a non-resident, but we just wouldn't be able to have them in the shelter as a resident. But we would still be able to help them in every which way we can, maybe find other housing or resources out there that would help them be in a safe place.
Does that include what we call elder abuse?
It could be, yes.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you've got mom or dad living at home and they're aging and not really able to stand up for themselves anymore. Maybe the mental situation is deteriorating a bit. There's some dementia setting in. There's at least some resources that you can offer for that situation?
Well, that's certainly when the dementia starts setting in, that's certainly another realm. We know we're not a social service agency. We're a social justice agency.
Okay.
And but we know those resources out there that could help them do that, but we, you know, ourselves cannot, you know, take care of that. They have to be able to take care of themselves when they come into shelter. Although in years past, when we were able to house people that were maybe abused by their adult child that had a caregiver as well, we've had like the hospice, or not hospice, but the home help, you know, the home services come in and stay with them while at the shelter. So,
okay, so there are resources you can at least refer people to and bring to bear in any situation in which somebody who is living with someone else is being abused.
Right, don't second guess it. Just call us, you know, and if you're an eligible client, we can certainly help you or make those proper referrals.
And let's, before we get too far into this, if somebody's listening now and is in this situation, how do they reach out?
They can call 906-337-5623 in our area up here. And we also have an office in Ontonagon, which is an outreach office. And that would be 906-884-4004.
And in Baraga County, folks in those situations are served by the Baraga County Shelter Home, and their crisis line is 524-7078. 7078. So if you're living in Baraga County and listening to this, the KBIC also has some resources available for tribal members if they are living in an abusive situation. And I guess we need to reiterate the message that if you are in that kind of a relationship, you don't need to be in that kind of a relationship. It's got to be very scary for someone who is perhaps completely dependent on the other partner, the wife on the husband for food, shelter, the kids are involved. It's got to be terribly scary, but there is help and support available.
That's true. I mean, don't ever be afraid to call us. I mean, you don't even have to tell us who you are. You know, you can just talk to us about your situation. And once you start talking about it, you know, it helps you cope with what the situation is. And we're not going to tell you to leave them. We're not going to tell you to divorce them. You know, that's not our goal. Our goal is to listen, and we learn how to say mm-hmm when we're in training. And, you know,
I would have a lot of trouble with that. I confess, I would be on the phone saying, get out of there. Get out of there now.
Well, and you know me, so I have a hard time doing that too. It's hard for me to sit when I was the court advocate, to sit there and sit with somebody and not say anything. And yet I've walked out of that court with a victim where, you know, she has said to me, I don't know what I've done without you. And that's a very powerful, empowering thing for her to know that she has the support there and yet has a voice.
If you're talking with somebody who's in an abusive relationship and they don't want to leave, are there skills that person can learn to help mitigate the situation?
Well, safety planning is one thing that we talk with people when they come in. I mean, you know, we have our one-to-one support advocacy that there's no fee for any of our services, so people can come in and they can talk about developing a safety plan if it's safe for them to even come in, you know, because a lot of times we're in a small community.
And, word does get around, doesn't
right,
it?
Right, right, yep. And so, you know, we will try to provide that safe environment for you to talk, even or just over the phone. I mean, our advocates are there 24/7, and we're there every day.
Because, I don't want to make it sound as if it's not necessarily the fault. Well, there's this old thing that says the abuser says, well, I was wrong. I brought it on myself. And obviously, abuse is never justified. You did not bring it on yourself. Right. But there may be things that you can do that change your behavior that would keep you safe.
Well, right. And we have to remember when we're on the outside, like you and I are right now, and we're not in that situation, and yet people are talking to us about it. You were right. The first thing you want to do is tell them, pack your bags and get out. But we have to realize as a community and stop asking, why doesn't she just leave, as to why does he still continue to abuse?
Yeah.
So we need to hold that a batterer, whatever, whoever or she ever is, accountable for that behavior. But what we need to do is start to plan that. How can we get away? I mean, you know, maybe you need to pack some things. Maybe you need to make sure there's things in other people's houses that if you have to leave, you can, you know, you'll have that. I mean, paperwork is very important to have, especially if you're getting housing. I mean, oftentimes we've had situations where birth certificates, driver's license, diplomas, anything with your name and identification on it has been destroyed, and so trying to get that back again is difficult, which, you know, we will help you to do that. We'll sit with you while you call and make those contacts to get another license or another birth certificate or whatever. And, you know, if we can at that time, if it's in our funding, we'll help you purchase those items. And if not, we'll help you find the resource to get those items, because it's not that expensive to get another birth certificate, but or to get a Social Security card. You have to have, you know, a number of items that also have your name on it. You
yes.
just can't go in and get a Social Security card without a picture ID, without this, without that, you know. And the
yes,
same
that
thing.
Catch 22. You
yes.
have to have it to get
yes.
it, but you can't get it if you don't
yes.
have it.
And even a power bill or electric or a gas bill or something with your name on it.
Much of which, I suppose, is in the husband's
no.
name.
Well, so, or, yeah, whoever.
The spouse's
it's just,
name.
Or if you rent and you don't pay those types of utility bills, it's all inclusive. You don't have that.
Yeah.
You know, so there's lots of resources that we can help you discover that you can use as identification that you are who you are. So
my guest is Mary Niemela from the Barbara Kettle Gunlock Shelter Home. Let's talk about a few things that are coming up, because you have several events that coincide with Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and there are a couple in Baraga County that I want to hit on as well.
Sure.
But before we get too deep into the program,
yes.
I want to make sure we get the details about
right.
all of these out. And let's start with what's happening tomorrow
right.
as we broadcast
right.
this on Sunday morning,
right.
your annual Ride Against Abuse.
Right. That is our 10th annual. I can't believe it's been 10
oh,
years
my word.
Already. 10th annual Ride Against Abuse. It's going to be on Monday, as you said, tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. We'll be starting at the American in Calumet, as usual. And we'll be gathering there for a bit when everybody gets there. And we will be starting off there and going through Laurium down Lakeland and Hill, as I call it, because I'm from above the hill, and down through Lake Linden and Hubble, Tamarack City, and up over the bridge.
The low road, as they call
That's
it.
That's right, the lower road. So if you're wanting to get some pictures, I'd say the best spot would be to be up in, is it Veterans Park, or above the bridge?
Yes.
Yes,
yep.
yeah. And watch us come over the bridge. That is a great view. And also, then we will come around Montezuma, down Sheldon, and then over to Chutes and Ladders parking lot. And last year, the police that was in front of us, the police car that was in front of us, cut down by between the downtowner and whatever on the corner, on the other corner there.
Oh, yeah.
you know
by
that
the
we're thinking. Yeah,
the corner with the downtowner on it.
Not the downtowner, the ambassador.
The ambassador,
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yes, and took us down that way along the lakeshore. And so that was even some more exposures, so we didn't have to block the traffic on the bridge again on this side. But we have a police car in front of us and a police car behind us, and then local police are stopping traffic all over Houghton and Hancock. So if you see that on Monday night or after 6:30, don't panic and you hear a lot of noise. It's just us. And
Ride refers to motorcycles.
Correct. Except me. I'm in my car in the very back, in front of the last police car. I have the best view.
Are you doing the parade wave, the Queen parade wave back
yes,
there?
Yes, left, right,
do
left,
that
right,
in the
yeah.
back there. And all people who ride motorcycles are
right.
invited to take part in this.
Yep. We've had, the lowest we've had was, I think, 37, and the most was 52. So this being our 10th anniversary, that's just bikes, and there's people riding on back of the bikes too. So
right, so some of them are doubled up.
Right, yep. And I know you're out there listening, and I hope all the familiar people that come all every year come back. If you're a new rider, we have a patch that says Ride Against Abuse, ADV Riders. So against domestic violence riders with the purple ribbon. And if you wear something purple, you know, there could be a prize involved.
Okay, yeah, and purple is the color.
Yes.
And not just necessarily for people who are riding, but along the route.
Right.
If you would like to salute this and show your support for this effort, maybe you're not a motorcycle rider, but you're along that route through Lake Linden and Hubbell and down into Dollar Bay. If you want to put some purple out in the yard or festoon the mailbox or something like that, or wear some purple out and just wave in the yard, that's a great way to show your support as well.
Yep, and Tom from the Quincy Mine Hoist will be lighting up the Quincy Mine in purple again this year. It's calendar for that. Last year I drove around Hancock to the point where I think they probably think I was stalking them waiting for that to happen. But, you know, it gets dark around 8 o'clock and it doesn't come on right away. So it's a beautiful sight to see that mine.
So that is coming up tomorrow night. We have details about that posted on our QNRReport.com community calendar. You don't have to register in advance.
Nope.
If you're a rider, just show up at the American. What time again?
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock, and the ride will probably get underway about 6:30 or thereabouts.
Well, it's about 6:20, 6:15, yep. Depends how long I talk.
All right.
Or how quick they get in.
So let me highlight a couple of things that are going on with the Baraga County Shelter, and then we'll get to a couple of more things that you are doing. The Baraga County Shelter Home is holding its annual Fall Fashion Show fundraiser. This will be Monday, October 16th from 5 until 8 at the Baraga Lakeside Inn. They will again this year be using fashions and models from the Croc and Rocker Boutique in Mishigami. They will have dinner, time for browsing and buying, raffle drawings and bidding on silent auction items. This is a major fundraiser for them. The only thing I don't know, they haven't told me yet, is how you get tickets for that, whether you need to get them in advance. But we'll have more details about that as the date approaches. Again, that is 2 weeks from tomorrow, the 16th of October, and we'll get those details posted on our QNRReport.com calendar. And coming up this Saturday, the 7th of October, the KBIC 14th Annual Domestic Violence Awareness Walk. This is done each year in memory of Chelsea Lafreniere, who was tragically killed, it's probably 15 years ago now, by her abuser in Baraga County. A terrible situation. I remember that, and we all, I think, in Baraga County, that still strikes a nerve when we think about that young lady. The walk will begin at noon at the corner of McGillan Street and Lyon Street in Baraga. Registration and check-in starts at 11. The walk will end at the Neewin IKEA Center Gymnasium, and there will be drumming and a feast and a raffle and some guest speakers and other events as well. And we have details about that posted on our QNRReport.com community calendar as well. Again, the KBIC 14th Annual Domestic Violence Awareness Walk, that is coming up this Saturday. So we've got those things coming up in Baraga County. What do you have coming up a little farther down the line for the Gundlach Shelter?
Yeah, well, for sure, we're doing this event on October 27th, which is new this year. It's our first time. We're doing it with the Agassiz House Inn. We're having, it's called the Agassiz, an evening at the Agassiz Inn. So we're going to have a silent auction and some appetizers, and the owners of the Agassiz Inn will be hopefully bringing up their Belgian horses in the wagon to take a ride around town. It's just going to be a suggested donation of $10 to come in. You get to tour the new facility, the way they remodeled it. It's beautiful if you haven't seen it. I was so pleased when I went in for their ribbon cutting with the chamber, and we're looking to see if anybody has a keyboard that would be willing to play some music for us, just some like music in one of the rooms there. And so if you know of anybody or willing to donate your time to do that, it's going to be from 7 to 10 on Friday, October 27th. So it's just going to be a fun evening in a way for everybody to see the Agassiz House Inn, to know that we're not there anymore. And so don't bring your donations there anymore. And you can call the shelter at 337-5632 to find out where we are, to bring your donations. And also more about the event. And you don't need any tickets or anything like that. Just come. We'll be putting out flyers about that on our website.
Of us who are nosy want to do this.
Oh, yes, yes. I mean, that's one in line there. Yep. It's beautiful.
Be very eager to see that.
Yes, yeah. And then it's just a way to, you know, help the shelter out a little bit, too. You know, we have, you know, what's looming over us, but the government shutdown. I don't know how that's going to affect us. But nonetheless, our funds have been cut in the past years too. So we're always looking to the community to help us in whichever way they can. And they just don't need to come to one of our events to do that. They can send a donation to P.O. Box 8 in Calumet, Michigan to the shelter, or go on our website and make a donation through our PayPal account. But it's just going to be a fun evening to get to meet the staff and the board and also meet the owners of the Agassiz House Inn.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your funding, because this is a whole like enterprise unto itself. Mm-hmm. Just coming up with the money to keep this valuable service going. You get some money from the state government. There are grants that are involved that have to be resubmitted and renewed periodically. Right. There are reports that have to be filled out and major amounts of paperwork that have to go on. It's got to be a real juggling act to keep the finances in order.
It is. I mean, we have 6 grants, but 5 of them total four of them total $300,000, period. And then another one is $19,701. And another one is part of the ARPA money, which we have no idea whether that's going to stick around or not. And so we don't even put things in there that we hope to get, you know, and we're just hoping that money will stay intact for the next 2 years as well. And this year we were able to do our rollover grants, so what we had last year stayed for this year.
Ah, that's nice. However, sometimes you have to give that back.
Well, right, and 2 years ago we had to do a competitive grant where we lost $154,000, just our shelter. All the shelters across the state lost money as well. And we're only a 10-bed shelter, and it doesn't sound like it's, you know, a lot to run that. We're lucky enough to own our building.
Yeah, but the depressing thing is, you're full.
Right, yeah. And
every time, in an ideal world, you'd be empty.
Right. We are asked to figure out, you know, how much does it cost per client, per resident, you know. And so we try to tally that up. And, I mean, it's like $100 a day to house somebody, you know, when you're thinking of the food, electricity, our outside donations, our community donations, they don't go to salaries, they go to direct services, you know.
And if it's $100 a day per person and you've got a mom and 3 kids.
Right, right.
All of a sudden that has multiplied exponentially.
Right, exactly. And so we purchase all the food, you know, we do all that, and we depend on the community to help us with that. So right now, Michigan Tech, during homecoming last week, did a collection of food canned goods for us. You know, when the summer, first year we moved in, one of the students in Lake Linden did a can drive as her student project for us. She delivered us 500 cans of soup, vegetables, and fruit.
Great.
I mean, and of course that's gone, you know, but I mean, it just seems like it's such a small thing to do. If somebody wants to do that for us, we are more than willing to allow you to do that for us, you know,
just
that and paper products.
Just
you know?
A couple of minutes left here, Mary, but yep. Real quickly, do you need on-site volunteer help?
Yes, definitely volunteers for sure. We've recently had a training, but we will do a training whenever we have somebody that's interested in volunteering for us. So they can just call the shelter at 337-5632 to ask for an application and when the next training is. And we'll make that training around your schedule as well. And when volunteers come, they're there to answer the phone and meet the needs of the clients. And mostly it would be on evenings and weekends. So anywhere between 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. could a shift be on a weekend. And they're usually in 4 or 6 hour increments, whatever works for you. We're very flexible, but we definitely do need volunteers.
So help out if you can in whatever way you can. And again, if you are in an abusive situation, you don't need to be in that abusive situation.
Correct.
There is a solution. There will be people to help you. How again do you get in touch?
906-337-5623 is our crisis line. And in Ontonagon, it's 906-884-4004.
And in Baraga County, the shelter home crisis line is 906-524-7078. Mary Nimala, thank you. And thanks to you and the folks who work with you for the good work you do.